Blog Good evening and welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Beauty Talk with Illusions Cosmetics for today, Thursday, August 13th. I'm your host, Janice Tennell, co-owner of Illusions Cosmetics, and tonight we are back for part two of a discussion on airbrush makeup with our guest, Suzanne Patterson. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi, how are you?
I am wonderful, and I'm so happy that you could join us again tonight.
Well, I'm just real delighted to be invited back.
Great. Please join in the discussion tonight by calling in with your questions and comments. Actually, we have a couple of questions that came in through email already. Call-in number is 914-803-4399. Again, the call-in number is 914-803-4399. You can also email your questions and comments to info@illusionsbeauty.com, and you can join us live in the chat room for a real-time conversation. Now, tonight, the giveaway in the chat room is being sponsored by Ket Cosmetics. And it's the, can't remember, my sister has the details on actually what's being given away, but it's valued at over $200.
Wow.
So
that's
awesome. Start chatting. Start chatting. So again, we have Suzanne Patterson. She's an Emmy-winning makeup artist who's a teacher of airbrush makeup and special effects. Suzanne joined us a few weeks ago for part three of a three-part series on airbrush, but tonight, this is part two of her original discussion. So we're excited to have you here, Suzanne. And just for those people who may not have heard the last show, can you just give us a brief introduction for anybody who's new of who you are and what you're currently involved in?
Oh, I don't like talking about myself, but I'm a makeup and special effects artist working here in D.C., primarily in the HD format. So I guess if anybody wants to read further, they can just go to the website, SuzannePatterson.com, and there's a little more in-depth there. Well, I guess the short bus description here is I also teach makeup workshops that are focused on acquiring the important technical skill interface for the HD format. So all of the workshops that I teach, there's five or six of them, are now definitely interfaced with that format. We just moved into our new studios and teaching facility in Chantilly, Virginia, which you've been over to see, so you have a firsthand look.
Yes.
This is where we moved in this summer, and this is where we also co-locate and run our online makeup store. I guess I'm also deeply involved with another company that probably most people don't know about. Excuse me. It's a veteran co-owned by my husband called Military Moulage Combat Injury Simulation. Now, there's a few makeup artists that know about this, but this is strongly predicated on my effect skills. We train military combat medics and civilian EMS first responders in casualty simulation methods, utilizing the state-of-the-art moulage materials and techniques specific to battlefield injuries. Our store is one of the main product suppliers for the Army's 32 medical simulation training centers here in the U.S., Kuwait, and in Afghanistan. I also had a team of moulage instructors who train all of the site leads, that is, the lead instructors, in combat injury simulation moulage for their field training exercises. One of the reasons I've gotten involved in this, of course, is I am, my family is military. I'm married to an Army officer, and I've had two kids that went to Iraq, and I'm probably the only one that has not had a deployed experience, but combat injury moulage has been proven to reduce combat medic freeze on the battlefield, so essentially there's faster triage time in packaging the wounded for hospital transport. So in essence, if we can just save one more life on the battlefield as a means of through this kind of training, then it's totally well worth it, and it's the statistics have proven that out. So
wow.
I guess the analogy is that I have two ships, my husband says, you have two ships sailing parallel in the ocean, and I kind of helicopter back and forth to manage the sailing of these two-pronged approaches to my career. So very rewarding, to say the least. And it's wonderful to be able to utilize your effect skills for a real-time purpose, a real-life purpose, instead of
right.
in production. So that's about the size of it, I guess.
Well, my sister has joined us, and if you could say hello to Suzanne and then give us some more detail on what you're giving away in the chat room.
Hi, Suzanne.
Hey, hi, Denise.
How are you?
I'm great.
Good, good. Can you all hold for a moment?
Sure, we can hold on for a moment.
A little technical difficulties there.
Yes. I see we have another person on the line calling from the 301 area. So are you calling to speak? Hello? I guess they're not. I guess they're just listening.
Okay, ladies, I'm back. Sorry about that.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit?
I'm sorry?
I was asking if you could tell us a little more about the... Yes.
Well, Ket Cosmetics is giving away $230 worth of Ket products. They're giving away five hydro foundations, one setting powder, and a six-pan palette of their cream foundations.
Oh, great.
So
that's
the most.
That's wonderful.
Great.
Yeah,
so
get in the chat room and, you know, join the conversation.
Start chatting away, start asking lots of questions for Suzanne if you want to win the giveaway from Ket Cosmetics. Now, Suzanne, the last time you just briefly mentioned it, but you talked about the High Def University. Can you speak in detail about that?
Sure. High Definition Makeup University is just simply a program acronym that captures the serious need for HD-specific makeup technique training and hands-on and in-depth workshop. Okay, I started this program at the beginning of the year as a follow-on to the short seminars that were sponsored by Graftopia and that I had been teaching in a number of cities around the country for 18 months prior, such as Phoenix, San Antonio, New Orleans, Louisville. And it just became really apparent in working with these artists in the seminar, and they were both union and freelance, that there was really a serious lack of real technical knowledge and technique and application for HD, particularly in the areas of understanding lighting, camera, and advanced color theory. They were, you know, it was like deer caught in the headlights kind of thing about what chroma saturations and grayscale components were of color theory, which is, that's the area in which HD cameras work in. So it's really imparting the knowledge of seeing and doing your makeup in the same way camera sees the reflected image, whether it's live broadcasted or live recorded. Makeup artists really aren't aware that there are two platforms of HD, such as I previously mentioned, live broadcasted or live recorded to broadcast. At HDMU, which is my acronym for it, we teach from the position of those two platforms that have very unique tactical approaches. So in a nutshell, I guess we cover everything, every technical aspect that can interface with the made-up image, such as the migration from NTSC to ATSC requirements, signal transmission, reception, and resolution mechanics, camera technology, and image vectoring in the waveform, which is where advanced color theory hits the hardest on a makeup artist skill in makeup for this format. So when you have image vectoring and you see it in a waveform, which I'm sure you two understand what that is, this really, really hits your makeup hard. And, of course, lighting. At the studio, we have a full live feed capable HD studio setup in the facility that includes not a broadcast monitor where, you know, camera is doing all of its corrections, but actually a large screen format consumer model where the consumer, where the end product actually is resolved to. So it's it's what I believe students need to see to really evaluate their work in.
Okay. Well, you know, I hear, and a lot of times I hear in a lot of your answers, you talk a lot about, of course, lighting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you talked just a few minutes ago about advanced color theory. I want to really dig deep into those two areas tonight. And I remember you saying in the last show that lighting is the star of the show. I know it's important, but can you just tell us how important is lighting to makeup? And what should we know and understand about lighting as makeup artists?
Well, to get to that point, I think there's just a number of other points that I'd like to touch on before we actually get to that.
Okay.
Yes. There's of course this jumps up from my travels around the country to smaller regional markets and you know, the larger regional markets that were acquiring, you know, full digital signal format, and the amount of knowledge or the lack of knowledge that a lot of them have because they had nothing prior to really compare it to. So I guess the analogy for the comparison between standard definition, which is, you know, what we've been in since the mid-90s, is standard definition would be like looking at yourself in a regular mirror. And high definition is like looking at yourself in a high magnification mirror. So when you start to bring a point of reference to makeup artists that have no clue, you know, especially ones that have been, you know, working in theater or working in print or have been doing, you know, very little non-digital video, this is a point of reference to them. As far as a skill correlation analogy, it's something like this, and this is what we imparted to our students in the lecture phase of our HD makeup class this past weekend. If you're used to working in a 35 to 70 millimeter film and paying close attention to the details in your craft, and your work passes muster in big scene cinema close-ups, then adding HD to your skill set would be just a fairly simple transition in your application technique and the products that you use. If you have little or no film experience, or most of your work has been done in photography, theater, and again, or a non-digital videotape type situation, then you will have an additional learning curve to train through to get the refinements that you need for this format. That's the basic difference. That's how I guess I would separate, you know, one or the other. Some of the key problems we face in makeup that we have to even deal with, as far as wardrobe, hair, even set design, is how much detail will stand up to closer scrutiny in this format. There are actually two platforms of high-definition television, or high-definition, I should say, format. There's the live broadcast television, and then there's live-to-recorded broadcast, meaning live-to-recorded means it goes through an editing process before it's broadcast. So these are two completely, they have a lot of the same things, but then they have also different requirements as well. And obviously in live broadcast television, there isn't just no room or time for makeup mistakes. You need to be accurate in every detail of the made-up image. So you're actually doing live editing on the spot before you send them out to the floor. So the control room monitor, of course, is going to show exactly what the live feed will broadcast like in 1080 or 720 line format. There's very little that can be done, you know, once it goes live to correct any flaws or color shifts. So you really have to be dead on accurate. And this is Sarah Seiden and Vance was our co-instructor at the last class, and this is her specialty. She works in live broadcast every day on a show that's broadcast on ABC Family. So she's just used to this. She has to be 100% accurate. So she was sharing a lot of her techniques and a lot of the problems and solutions that she faces every day in her particular venue. It's absolutely crucial that makeup is done in accurate lighting to reflect the correct spectrum of colors and skin so you can reproduce a natural looking live broadcast. So skin tones must match exactly. Another issue is that multiple camera setups often make lighting talent a little more challenging. So your makeup cannot be an errant issue to deal with. It has to be done correctly to meet those lighting variables. So those are just some of the things of the live broadcast platform. Now, live to recorded broadcast, you have to have the same accuracy. But if mistakes are made, they can be adjusted in digital post-production editing. So if you've got some skews going on or some things that you didn't catch, they can be, quote, fixed in post. However, having said that, never rely on your makeup being fixed in post.
That's right.
You want to have it as correct as possible, even though we have such a major fix it in post mentality, especially in this area. That's not your default. You need to be just as accurate as if it was going live.
Absolutely.
Lighting is also just as crucial to your makeup application in this platform as it is in live broadcast. So, you know, it's totally the same. Now, when you're recording in these cameras, you understand that colors at the red end of the spectrum resolve very strongly in HD. So that red electron has this highest percentage in the white light formula. So it's very, very sensitive to red. So when you're recording in that, makeup colors in this spectrum will appear colder and oversaturated against skin, which can produce a very unnatural look in editing. So that's one thing that you really want to watch is that particular area. So in TV series work, and you all know this too, that continuity in your makeup is extremely important from day to day for smooth editing and overall consistency in your work. It's very, very important. So I have to say that makeup artist operational skills, your color theory needs to be really, really strong. You need to know gray value scale, chroma saturations, and you need to be very, very accurate in reading color temperatures and balance and values. This is really, really important that your makeup is essentially white balanced. In other words, it's done in the same temperature as camera adjusts its electrons to read white light. So you know that if you're dead on with camera, then you're able to correct color shifting values in the makeup as seen in the line monitor.
So how do we do that? How do we make sure that the makeup is light balanced?
The way that it all marries into your skill. It all starts with light. Every bit of it starts with light. And I guess we'll kind of skip over to I had kind of my talking points there, but we'll just skip over to this. As I said before, that the HD camera is really a turbocharged color theory reproduction tool, and it's all about lighting more than ever, revealing the chromacity and color saturations in the recorded image. Light is going to show skews in the skin texture and reveal multi-tonalities in the undertone and the top tone of the skin. Makeup has to correctly address both temperature and values of the complexion in order for light to reflect the image properly in camera. So what that means is that before you begin your makeup, your lighting has to be correct. I think the light is even more important than your makeup brushes. If you are doing your makeup in a minimum of 32 Kelvin temperature light, and that's what white light is. That's the the median spectrum at which camera balances. It can balance anywhere between 3200 Kelvin to 3500 Kelvin. That's usually the range in which the camera balance is at. So if you are doing your makeup, if you're looking at your makeup the same way camera is looking, quote unquote, at your image, then you know that you're reading. You have the ability to read your top tones and undertones correctly, and you have the ability to match those undertones in warm, cool, or neutral. And you have the ability to read the steps in value, how light or how dark that skin tone is. Those are the two main things that you're looking for. And then, of course, after you've determined that, then you must read the different values that the skin has. In other words, the different shifts in light to dark in skin. You can have, especially with African-American skin, they can have as many as 3 to 5 tones going in the top tone in value. Light areas, dark areas, medium areas, and you need to be able to meet all those and read all those. The reason why light is so important is because we all have a color perception skew. We all naturally have a color perception skew. The rods and cones in our eyes, which resolve the color spectrum and how we see the colors in our environment, can vary anywhere from just a small skew, excuse me, all the way to complete color blindness. So no two people are going to see color exactly alike, or the saturation of it exactly alike, or the values of it, steps in value exactly alike. However, when you raise the temperature of the light rays, in other words, the Kelvin temperature, if you get it up to the top of the spectrum of the white light spectrum, anywhere from 52 to 5500 degrees Kelvin, that illumination allows you to make up for some of the color skews that people were. If you put 3 makeup artists together, and if they're reading color at 32K, they're all not going to see the same thing. But if they're reading it at 55K, all of a sudden the illumination, the reflection to their eyes, they're almost going to be closely right on together with it. So that's why I always recommend if you've got a tungsten light, if you've got a yellow light, then you need to throw a CTB quarter blue on it so you can raise that Kelvin temperature to 55. I believe 55 is optimal for all makeup artists to be able to do their makeup correctly.
So basically, it's not as easy being a makeup artist as some people think it is.
Well, I guess let's put it this way. The high def full acquisition digital signal has turned us into electronic makeup artists. It really demands that we understand the technicals of what we're doing. We can't just be making them up pretty. We have to make them up in the same science that the recorded image is recording that, and it's super, super accurate. It's more accurate than most people can see. And, even in the analog and digital format, we had a degree of forgiveness because of the lower resolution. Well, this is 5 times the resolution of standard definition, 5 times, 5 times the detail, 5 times the scrutiny, and sometimes it sees better than some people can see. You know, it resolves more than what people can actually take in detail. I have to have a small high-def television because I can't handle these big screens with all this resolution. It just is an assault on my eyes. It just gives me a headache. So I'm speaking from a consumer end that, I just don't want to see that super green shade of green blade of grass that a lot of sportsman fanatics want to see on a 60-inch screen television.
Right.
It just doesn't do it for me. But, it's all about lighting. If you walk on your set and you're depending on somebody else to give you the eyes to see through the lighting so that you can be correct to camera, you're really taking a chance. You really need to have your own lighting set up. Do it yourself. Make sure that you're reading skin and looking at your makeup in a minimum of 32K. And I say go to the maximum of 52 to 55, which is why we have this little stick-up light in our store that just so that a makeup artist will have something that they can carry with them and not be dependent on production to provide it. Now, you ask the lighting crew, well, I want a quarter blue on that tungsten. Oh, you don't need that. Don't worry about it, They're more interested in what they're doing. They're lighting the scene. They don't care about lighting the talent. They care about lighting the overall scene. You have to go in there and fight for the right lighting for your talent.
Right.
You know, is that halo light too hot? Is it causing a bleed? Or, you know, they always want to blame the makeup. But you know that if you have done your makeup correctly and the correct amount and the correct Kelvin temperature, at least the minimum of what camera's doing it, then you know you're going to be able to adjust your, you know, your color shifts accordingly because you're going up and down the same way camera is.
Right, and if you have a good director of photography or DP who, you know, he will light talent, you know, so that it all looks good, you know, not just scene.
That's
but
not the case. That might be the case in live broadcast, but it's not the case in these little. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
What I've noticed on some film projects and television projects.
Uh-huh.
I mean, most of them do care about the actor, and so they're. I mean, because if they're DPs that are, you know, well known for what they do, trust
sure.
me, they're going to want everything to look good.
But see, you're working in a union format. You know, you're working in a different echelon.
Right.
And
right.
I'm
and
talking about.
We're talking about. Yeah.
Right. And you know, I would expect that on a union shoot. You know, I would expect a lot more cooperation. But the majority of makeup artists are freelancers, and I guess this is who we are targeting, is those who don't have the. You know, the ability at the level that you guys do, because this is 99.9% of the makeup artists out there, you know, are freelancers, and they need this same information, and they don't always get the luxury. It's like the makeup. I'll tell you, still, the first to go in a budget is who? To get cut out when they're making up their budget for a shoot. And this is not, I'm talking non-union, and you guys, you know. But I'll tell you, the first one to go is the makeup artist. That's
oh, yeah,
how little,
sure.
huh?
Okay,
you're absolutely
sure.
right.
Yeah. If they have to cut the budget, it's going to be the creative services, the ones who make the talent look good. This is the mentality that most of everyone runs into in these regions. That's how little of importance of value that they place. And sadly, you know, this is true even in high def shoots. Those that do make sure that the makeup artist is on set to make sure that the makeup correct, you know, those are the more serious shoots. Those are the ones that know that, you know, hey, we have to deliver our content. It has to look right. It has to go through editing. Pass muster to, you know, to our client. So that's where the majority of makeup artists are going to be working is in the freelance. But a well-equipped freelance artist that has the knowledge and the technique is going to be at the front of the line because, you know, they are, quote, camera ready through the whole process. They know enough about lighting, at least that, you know, every makeup artist needs to be able to explain three-point lighting. You have to know that. You have to understand that because this is the frame of reference in which, you know, your talent is being lit. That's where everything starts. So you have to understand that you've got your fill, you've got your key, you've got your fill, and then you've got your back or halo light. And depending upon how that's adjusted is going to affect your makeup in the monitor. And so you have to really work to with the lighting people. You need to be able to speak their language. You need to be able to protect your talent in that lighting process, because in this area, in this region, in what I work in, which is non-union stuff, and there's, you know, there's a ton of industrial, there's government, there's military, there's news bureau, there's all kinds of types of live to record it, to edit, to broadcast video being shot here. And it's a pretty rich environment for that. But at the same time, you know, you still have to interface with those same basic principles, and you need to know them. You know, if you're doing your makeup at the same white light temperature as camera, that will ensure that your makeup color baseline will never fail you in adjusting and correcting skin tones. you know, for the color shifts and the line monitor. It's just about being ultra-professional as much as you can by bringing your own lighting and bringing your own ability to be able to talk intelligently with your DP and your lighting crew. They will really, really respect you. You know, they will listen to you. They will make you a part of the process. But if you just do your makeup and then go off and sit in the corner and that's the end of it, well, then, you know, you pretty much have lost some ground there if they end up making your makeup look, giving it, you know, making it skewed or lighting it too hot. Those are the things that you need to be able to interface with so that your talent has a pleasing overall look. And they really depend on you. They really, really do depend on you more than you think, your talent, to make sure that they look correct. So in HD, it's definitely a collaborative effort. At least it has been for me. The gliding guys around here, you know my stuff, and so whenever I, you know, come on set, and they're always willing to work with me, and we work together on it to make sure. Now, I'm not telling them how to light, but I have enough knowledge that we can work together on it.
Great. Well, Suzanne, I just want to take a small break because we've had makeup artist Karen Sidberry, and she's actually in the Washington, D.C. area herself.
Mm-hmm.
She sent in or emailed us about 5 questions, and I wanted to kind of go through this list.
Sure. Yeah, I'd love to take questions.
Okay. Her first question is, what airbrush makeup would you suggest for special effects work like bruises and burns?
Okay, say that again. What special effects makeup airbrush?
She says, what airbrush makeup would you suggest for special effects work like bruises and burns?
And to make bruises or burns, or to cover
yes.
bruises and burns?
To make them. I guess.
I don't use the airbrush for that because it's so much quicker with hand applied. So
hand
much quicker
applied.
With the alcohol activated palettes or the rubber mask grease. So I never use the airbrush for that.
And so when you talk about the alcohol activated palettes, you're talking about like Skin Illustrator.
Uh-huh. Actually, I like Real Creations. Skin Illustrator is very good, but Real Creations I really like a lot, simply because when I reactivate the ink, you know, when I ink them down, they homogenize completely into the whole little square, and they don't just sit on top of it, so it all looks like the same color.
Gotcha. Now, Skin Illustrator, I think Real as well, they all come in a liquid form as well, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. They come in a liquid. They come in their liquid forms. The differences between there's a number of alcohol-based palettes out there, and I guess you just have to go and do your own experimenting, but I have found that what's a winner for me is one that when I can recharge that particular color in the palette, that it completely sinks down into the whole little color square, right? And it looks the same as it did before I did that. Whereas some of the other palettes, it looks like you poured the ink on top of it, and it separates out. So to me, this is a real big plus. I need to have total continuity within that color.
Yeah, I mean as far as airbrush makeup, creating some of that for me, in order for it to look realistic, I agree with you. I think hand applied would be a lot better.
Hand applied is because you can shear out and thin out your color, especially if you're using RMD or the alcohol based. It has to look like it's coming from underneath the skin. It can't look
yeah.
like it's sitting on top of the skin. I'm not saying that you can't do bruising and you can't do that,
right.
but you really have to develop your technique to do that. And it takes, you know, you're changing out the colors and you're doing all that when you can just easily dip into your palettes or your RMG
right.
to easily shear that out. I mean, you can take alcohol and shear out your rubber mask grease, and that's what I prefer to use, actually, sometimes, because I find that RMG has a more saturated color, but yet it's sheared. You can shear it out, but there's more saturation in the color than if I use the inks. That's the big difference. So I think that, personally, I think RMG reads better than the alcohol-based inks do in certain things. I mean, it's just a matter of personal preference.
All right.
And her next question?
Her second question is, are there specialized airbrushes, I guess she's speaking of the gun, for special effects makeup work?
Mm-mm. Nope. There's just different nozzle bore sizes to push different viscosities. That's it. So if you have, if you're going to do face work, then you would want to use a more thinned out viscosity and a smaller nozzle, like a 0.2. So if you were going to do body work, you'd want to go to a 0.3 because you have a broader surface to spray out, and a 0.3 will spray thicker viscosity. So you can use acrylics and alcohol bases and those kinds of things. It just depends on what your project is. But there's, you know, it's just knowing the kind of airbrushes that you can switch out to. I have a 0.2 for face work, and I have a 0.3 to 0.5 for body work.
That's just knowing what, you know, the difference.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's just, when you want more refined work, you're going to use a smaller nozzle and lower PSI for face or fine detail work.
Okay. Her third question is, she says, I am just starting out in special effects makeup and airbrushing.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be easier to use stencils to create bruises, burns, road rash, et cetera, or to do it freehand? I guess that was kind of similar to the other question.
I would really suggest to her to learn to do it organically and not do it mechanically, for want of a better way. Learn to develop your freehand skills. Stencils, you know, that's like point and shoot, and you're going to have hard edges. Using stencils is always going to give you a hard edge. It's great for temporary tattoos and that kind of work, but You can't have a hard edge on bruising. That's got to have really blended out and having the correct colors. A bruise is actually more red than it is purple in the beginning. You got to know your stages of bruising. So you have to do your bruises according to the stages of bruising, and how a bruise actually how the blood pools in the skin. So it's more of developing the art form than it is taking a stencil on the canning and then just spraying it on. It will never, ever pass muster in HD with hard edges. It will just look like a temporary tattoo.
Right.
So my strongest suggestion is to develop, you know, her freehand technique.
Okay.
And I strongly suggest that she develop it in traditional makeup before you go to the airbrush. The airbrush, to me, you know, is not a be-all, do-all for everything. It is a wonderful transparency tool, opacity tool, and it's wonderful for foundational uses. But it's great for, you know, shooting temporary tattoos. It's great for changing the color on the skin, especially if you're doing an ethnic color, making somebody look ethnic. Needing a darker skin tone, it's great for that. But as far as doing a complete makeup, I'm not in favor of that. That's not my philosophy.
Okay. Well, speaking of temporary tattoos, she also asked, when applying temporary tattoos, I find that the ink/makeup looks shiny afterwards. I did use a blotting powder after completing the application, but it still looked shiny. What would you suggest to remedy this issue?
Well, first of all, I'd ask her what kind of vehicle did you use to shoot your temporary tattoo? Usually temporary tattoos are shot with alcohol-based inks. So those are very, very flat. They have a very flat finish. alcohol is about as flat as you can be. If it's shiny, then I would say that she either used a glycerin-based or a silicone-based makeup to shoot the temporary tattoo with. In that case, that's going to be very temporary. It's not going to wear like an all day. It'll just come right off, eventually with wear. So powdering that down might take down the shine momentarily, but those two entities will reabsorb and it'll turn shiny again. So if she's shooting temporary tattoos, it needs to be done in an alcohol-based ink product. And then covering it with powder makes it more durable.
Okay. And then her very last question
mm-hmm.
is, she says, I saw a video on YouTube where this girl took a powdered mineral foundation, mixed it with a liquid, and she can't remember at the moment what liquid
mm-hmm.
it was, but she
mm-hmm.
mixed it with the liquid
mm-hmm.
and then applied it through her airbrush.
Mm-hmm.
She says that she thinks that she would be afraid to try that, but she just wants to know, what is your opinion on that?
Never have tried it. Never had the desire to try it, but you can definitely mix down any kind of powder into a liquid form and spray. If your interfacing ratios are correct, and that means if your air pressure and your fluid viscosity and your nozzle bore size are all in sync, and you can push it through. The end result, it's going to vary from one powder mix to the next, but if you can mix it down and spray it, then you can deliver it. Personally, I don't have any mineral-based makeup because I don't see it as appropriate for HD.
Right.
So I don't deal with it at all. But
wait,
if you can mix it and you got the interfacing ratios correct, it'll spray.
Can you repeat what you about mineral makeup?
Which part?
Part about not being appropriate for HD.
It's too reflective. It's very, very reflective.
I'm sorry.
And minerals, we're talking about silica, mica, mineral, all those things can be detected in HD. It just
right.
looks like a holographic reflection close up.
Right.
Have you ever seen some women, and you're in a store or you're outside and you're in noonday sun and you're standing next to them or talking to them, and all of a sudden you see this glitter on their face, all over
yep.
their face?
Mm-hmm.
And that's one major cosmetic company, one mm-hmm. cosmetic giant's mm-hmm. version of soft focusing. And
right.
really, it's just plain glitter on the face. There's just really no way to make it look natural, and that's the mica in there. And I can tell when women have this stuff on because it when they get outdoors, especially in noonday sun, it just really reflects.
Mm.
Doesn't do what the company says it's supposed to do. It just looks like glitter to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One of the things I wanted to ask, and I don't know if Suzanne, if you had any other points that you wanted to make, but one of the things that I wanted to ask, you were talking before in your last interview about undertones and top tones.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted you to speak on that in regards to how it relates to lighting.
Well, undertones and top tones. First of all, your undertone is how is the temperature of your skin tone, whether you're a warm, a cool, or a neutral. So that means whether you sit, your undertone, the greatest percentage of color in your undertone is on the warm side, meaning it registers in the yellow or the golden. If it registers in the ruddy or the red tones, if the greatest percentage of your undertone registers in that, well, then you're in the cool aspect. Those who are equal amounts of warm and cool are in the neutral because they're neither warm or they're neither cool. They're neither overly yellow or overly red. So you really have three different undertones. And most makeup artists, especially if they've worked at the counter have really only been trained in warm and cool, and that's been the case for decades. They, if they don't see yellow, then they automatically assume that the person's cool, and they totally bypass the fact that we have neutral undertones. If I sampled 20 people off the street, I will tell you that 9 of them will be yellow, 8 of them will be neutral, and then 3 of them will be cool. That's been about the ratio that I've seen. And you really need to be able, you need to really be able to train yourself to see neutrality in an undertone, because the HD camera will bring it out. They will, the camera will absolutely determine that will be able to register in all those three undertones. So you need to be able to match that undertone. Now, the top tone is simply how light or how dark you are. That's the value. Values meaning, you know, how light you are on the grayscale, from the lightest alabaster to the deepest, darkest ebony, you know, from 1 to 10. So you need to be able to read those different top tone tonalities so that you can match those skin tones exactly in those values. Some too many people just take one color of their skin. Instead of reading all the tonality, the top tones, they will simply just look at the overall skin tone and say, okay, you know, this person's this color, and they will use that one color over the entire face. Well, what they've done is they've taken the character and they've taken the levels of the face completely away and made a mask out of it. And they'll look lifeless in camera. Everyone has at least 2 or more tonalities in the top tone of the skin. And you need to be able to read those and meet those so that you don't lose the levels of life in the skin, especially for this format.
Okay.
Does that help?
Yes, it does. It does. It helps a lot. We have a caller from the 301 area code. Hello, caller. Would you like to say something?
Yes. I took the first HD.
Who's calling? Who is this?
This is Sandy.
Sandy. Okay. Yeah. Hi, Sandy.
Hi. How are you? Hi, Suzanne.
Hey, Sandy.
I just have to tell people about the HD makeup course that Suzanne teaches.
Uh-huh.
I consider myself a novice in makeup.
Mm-hmm.
The class was an invaluable experience. And when I took the first course, it was one day. Remember, Suzanne?
Yes. Yeah,
and
we,
there was so much information that Suzanne decided to make it a 2-day course.
Right.
And I would just recommend that every makeup artist take a class like that, because it's just an invaluable experience. And when Suzanne was talking about lighting, it just makes a very big difference. I purchased a light from her website, and I cannot tell you, I was embarrassed to see how blind I was before I had the light.
Well,
I would just encourage anyone to, any makeup artist, if you haven't taken a class from Suzanne, she has so much knowledge that it's just amazing. It blows my mind.
Do you remember the experiment that just simply by taking the CTB blue filter on and we let everybody look?
Exactly.
In camera, how it looks like when you do it in just a plain tungsten yellow light, and then we put the color corrector on it, and
exactly.
It was pretty amazing.
That
alone just tells you right there what you're not seeing and what you need to see, because you're not seeing what camera sees without that filter.
Right, and when you talk about tones
and
the neutral. I'm still trying to understand the neutral, so I will be back to take more courses.
Well, we, for all of our students, we are going to have an open practice day. Sarah and I decided that because so many of the students are just wanting to practice, and of course we now have a camera set up with the monitor and with the lightings, their kinoflow types, and this is most often what you run into on video shoots here in this area. So we're very, very happy to be able to have this studio where we can have the opportunity to teach. But for our students, we're going to have open practice days where we will set up the camera and y'all can come in and practice some more. So that was one of my fondest desires and dreams, was to be able to have this, to have this place where you could just come in, and like a safe environment where you could practice and learn, make mistakes in a laboratory environment rather than making them on set.
Fantastic. I'll be there.
Great. It's good to talk
Thank
to you.
Thank you for your call and comment, Sandy.
Thank you so much.
Sandy.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, we now have Maxie on the line. Hi, Maxie.
Hi.
How are you?
I've been listening and, you know, loving everything that Sandy has to say. I personally, you know, do that mask method for my own face. The fact is that I agreed with everything that she had to say, because I take the light. If a makeup artist doesn't know light, doesn't know the lighting that's being used, isn't familiar with the lighting or film choices or whether it's video or HD or whatever it is, and if you're not familiar with that and doing an application based on that, then it's just always going to end up terrible. And I personally do, at least, I end up always doing like three foundations. Like, I spend most of my time on the skin, especially for HD jobs. I've noticed the only thing that really matters is the skin. And everything else can, you know, you can get, it doesn't, you know, you do a great up, the eye and the lip is whatever, but the skin is what really is the important thing for the HD. And I always end up using three different colors for everybody's face anyway. And I just have to just agree with everything this woman has to say. Hi, Sandy, I'm Maxie. And
You make an excellent point. You hit the nail on the head. It really is about skin. Your color palettes, you know, yes, if you understand what, you know, warm on a warm palette on cool skin is going to look dramatic. If you can mix and match and go back and forth in your temperatures, but it really, really is about skin. It's not about the color palettes essentially, but you just nailed it. It really is.
Yeah, I mean, and it's true. Like, this neutral tone is like so prevalent. There's not just, you know, and I don't know. I just agree with everything you say. But I'm calling today though to talk about hygiene. I'm just going to spend a minute talking about it, and then we can, like, maybe I'll talk about it for a minute, because I was devastated recently on a job when there was this great makeup artist, and she was from out of town, but I've seen this from Los Angeles and New York makeup artists as well, and she came with this giant box of, you know, one of those black fold-out boxes with tons of makeup, and it was just like a dust pit. And we all know, we hope it's makeup dust, but dust is actually skin cells floating around. You know, most of dust, except for hopefully in a makeup box, is usually skin cells. So part of that dust is actually people's skin cells in those boxes. And what horrifies me is boxes, period. Just having a box and having makeup in a box is just setting yourself up for, you know, a dirty kit. Mm-hmm. You cannot have, like, I've now, my entire kit is in, like, bags and zip bags. Everything is in sealable plastic bags. Some of them are decorative or whatever, but they zip, and then everything else is inside of another bigger zip bag. And I found that that's the only way to keep out dust. But besides that, this sweet angel, this wonderful makeup artist, also had, and her palettes were sort of, you know, had makeup around the edges of the actual makeup in the palette.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, there was powder or there was cream or whatever it was, it just wasn't completely, perfectly wiped down. But that wasn't the only thing. What killed me was she went ahead and double dipped on the mascara. And this is something that we naturally, like the urges to dip in the mascara, to do an eye, to dip in again and do the other eye, right? But you can't do that. I think everyone learns this in school, but you have to actually use a new wand or use with disposable wands, or, you know, you cannot double dip and do that. You have to clean the wand in between. I don't know what you have to do. If you don't have disposables, then you can just clean your wand in between eyes. But anyhow, so this great makeup artist who I loved, who was a wonderful girl and very talented, was filthy. And, you know, I don't know what causes this, but I've seen this many times before. And believe me, I show up with a clean kit, and then my area ends up looking like a trash dump, always, on every job. But there's never, like, you know what I mean? Like, the things I've just discussed, I've seen many times over and over in people's kits. And I have to tell you, people, everyone, you cannot use boxes, number one. Everyone should toss out their boxes. Unless it's like for special, you know, like your special effects kit box or specialty box or something, I don't know. But you cannot even use boxes. I don't know why people produce makeup boxes at all. They should stop manufacturing them. And I think it's time for everyone to know that. And that's why I'm calling in today to talk about hygiene and maybe you guys' experiences. And maybe people can ask questions, like, about hygiene, because it's literally the most important thing next to you being able to do a great application, you know what I mean? It's even more important, because if you give a great application and you're doing it dirty, it's not a great application. People would choose to have a less great application than to have a great, dirty application. So...
There's two things that come to mind, and boy, do I agree 100%. I mean, I'm a germaphobe, big time. I completely, totally agree with what he's saying. When I do mascara, I bring a ton of mascara tubes. That's probably I consider mascara a disposable. Everyone has their own tube, brand new, right from the get-go. During the shoot, and then I hand it to them. They get to take it home. But I don't even do the dipping with the disposable brushes. I go through mascara like nobody's business. So
I do that for like
women on a shoot, then it's going to be five tubes of mascara, and boom, out the, you know, that's theirs. It's a disposable. Number two, I use a nano disinfection. And I don't know if you've seen that, Denise and Janice on the site. But this is a handheld hospital-grade UV light that I wand over my entire kit when I set up and in between clients. I mean, it kills every virus known to man. It's a hospital grade. And I don't think any makeup artist should ever be without that, because, you know, that just is such peace of mind to me. My whole setup, after I get it all set up, I take the wand out and I click it on. That light goes over the entire, as clean as I am, I still do that.
That's amazing. I have to say, for celebrity clients, I always get a new tube of mascara because you just have to. But when you're doing like a job with many girls, and some people probably can't afford to get new tube for everyone, but you just can't double dip no matter what your deal is, you know.
And don't stick your brush into the creams. Take it and put it on your palette with a palette knife, mm-hmm. and then use it. Take it out of the container. Remove a small amount of it. Do not dip into the container. That's my biggest pet peeve.
And I guess I have to say that when I went to makeup school, the very first thing that we taught and that we focused on was sanitation. So because that was something that was put into our minds at the very beginning, that's something that I've always carried with me all through the years. It is so important.
Agreed.
You know, to do some of the things that you're saying, you know, using the spatula and the, you know, your palette for, you know, certain products. You have to be very, very careful.
There's also the integrity of washing your brushes.
Yes.
Okay.
They're
oh,
not
going to.
There is the I mean, that is a that there is the integrity that you must have. That when you go home, the first thing I do is they are completely soaped out with this, the same stuff I've used for 30 years. I that's the first thing I do when I get home is clean those things to death. And I know that there's makeup artists that lay them aside and they look at them and they, if it doesn't look dirty to me, it won't look dirty to the client. That's lack of integrity.
Oh, my God.
Well, it does. If they do, I've seen that. I have called makeup artists on that.
No, I know. I've seen
I've
all these things and work.
I've had someone assist with me who I can detect a dirty brush a mile away, even if it's been slightly used. I can smell it. That's that bad.
Wow.
But I totally confiscated her brushes and made her use mine. That and she doesn't, you know, this particular person doesn't work with me anymore because that was a complete showstopper that she would come to set unprepared.
Yeah, and if you and also I just want to add to that that if you are going to use a box, do get one of those lights, whatever your UV hospital grade. Whatever light.
It's called the nano disinfection scan. It's called the nano scanner, and it's $69 or whatever. But it lasts indefinitely. But you can go to the parent company, and you can see the trials and all of the studies and everything that has been done. This little tool has been. We actually have a bigger unit in the studio, a big one where you can open, you know, you drop down the door and I throw all my brushes in there. So we have a big commercial grade one at the studio. But this is a small handheld version of it and no makeup artist. I'm talking about we're getting into the swine flu season. We're getting into the cold season. I take it with me when I'm out in public and I'm in a public restroom. It travels with me everywhere because I just, you know, even at the grocery store and, you know, you've got the, you know, carts and I'll put it on the hand. I'm sorry, but it's just I can't afford to be sick. If I'm sick and I can't work and I don't want to make anybody else sick as a result of picking up pink eye or whatever, or picking up some, but it will kill the swine flu virus. It has, you know, it's that powerful. You don't ever want to use it on your skin, but it will obliterate. That's what it's designed to do. So, if you're in doubt, get yourself one of these little things and carry it with you.
They need to advance that light and make it for like people.
Say
it again? We need to advance that light for skin so you can zap people before you, like, shake their hand or, you know. You'd be like, hold on 1 second, zap. Hi,
well,
how are you?
I think you're, yeah, that's a good one. I just think as makeup artists we owe it to ourselves to be scrupulously clean. And I haven't been sick in several years, so I count my blessings in that regard, but I think I have to owe it partly to the nano scanner. I'm just kind of maybe kind of hyper about it, but when it just comes to being really, really clean and then that extra little bit of, okay, I know everything's been killed on this surface. It's done. It's dead. So, and even in
between the girl that I was working with, my God, she wasn't even near getting a nano scanner. She was like, she was not even wiping down her palette. That would, you know, and it's just, it's sad because it, you know, I don't want to necessarily, it wasn't my place to have hired her. She was there hired by other people, and she was like an additional makeup artist, but I just, if I had the opportunity, like I would, she was so talented, it was like, but still, no one would, if any client saw that kit, which they do every time she opens it, they would probably never call her back. I mean, or anyone she works with ever would call her back. Like, I just don't understand
that. Well, she has the unfortunate situation of being in a celebrity talent and a celebrity talent calling her on the spot for that. And that wouldn't be good. That would
no.
Make,
even
that,
models,
that
though,
would...
even models are like, uh-uh, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
They're like, don't come at me with that. You just dip that back in. Like,
then that's a good thing. She's probably going to get the message, but maybe some kind-hearted soul like yourself might be able to take her side quietly. And
honey, I grabbed a baby wipe. I started wiping down her palace. I said, honey, I love doing this. I go, let me wipe down your palace. And she's like, oh, I'm going to do that when I get home. But, I mean, she had done three girls. Oh, well, actually, she traveled from another state. Maybe the airplane destroyed her kit. But either way, like, I would have never been able to open it up again. I would have had to clean it after the airplane. I don't know what it was, but this was a crazy situation. But it happened so much that I felt like I had to bring it up today. I've seen it now, let's say, 5 times this year, kits in that condition.
Well, it's such an important point to bring up, because we may have some novice artists, developing artists out there who really value your opinions in that and what we've talked about. So you've done a great service to inform these people that are listening, these artists that are listening, that it is very, very important to be as scrupulous as you can, as scrupulously clean as you possibly can. Whatever it
now,
takes.
Sandy, I have to say thank you. Thank you for that. My whole goal in life is to do nothing but help the world. And I wanted to announce before I left that I am the biological mother of Prince in Paris.
Maxie.
You knew I had to say it.
Maxie, I think you meant Suzanne, right? You say Suzanne.
No,
I'm wondering if there's somebody else here.
Well, actually, Sandy is back on the line.
Yeah, Sandy is, because...
okay.
Yeah, when I heard Maxie talking about hygiene, I just couldn't help it. I had to call back.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, wait, maybe I am continuously referring to Suzanne. I'm sorry, I didn't know.
Okay.
I thought your name was Sandy. But as long as you guys all know that I am seeking custody and I am seeking control of the estate, and don't worry about those kids anymore. Okay, I'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.
Thank you, Maggie.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, you all, we have actually gone over the time just chatting away. But thank you so much, Suzanne.
Thanks, Suzanne.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Coming back. Thank you, Sandy, for calling in with your comments. I appreciate it.
Thank you for your time.
And for all those who join us in the chat room, and for those who just tuned in and listened, thank you so much. Join us again every Thursday night, 9 p.m. on Duty Talk. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Oh, somebody wanted to say something?
I just wanted to announce that Kiss and Makeup is the winner in the chat room of the Pet Cosmetics giveaway tonight.
Kiss and Makeup.
Yay! Thank you.
How many people did you have in the chat room tonight?
I think there was about 5 or 6.
Awesome. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you all. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Suzanne.
Uh-huh.
Congratulations to Kiss and Makeup. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.